Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. One distinction connected with a set of terms that is associated with Immanuel Kant that we find coming up in his Prolegomena to Any Future Metaphysics, particularly in part two of the work, is that between phenomena and noumena. And it's, in his view, not a radically new distinction. It's one that, as he says, since the oldest days of philosophy, inquirers into pure reason have thought that. And then he goes on. So this is something that goes all the way back. And, you know, if you know your history of philosophy, you can say, this begins perhaps with Parmenides or Plato or somebody else along the way, right? And it's one that hasn't gone away, I would say, in part because Kant himself uses it. And Kant is not saying that there is no such thing as noumena. It's all just phenomenal. But he is going to set some limits, and he's going to carry out a kind of interesting reversal in certain respects. So he tells us that these inquirers into pure reason have thought that besides the things of sense, the Sinnenwesen or the appearances, their Erscheinungen, right, a term that we've encountered earlier in the work, there were certain beings of the understanding, noumena, which should constitute an intelligible world, and the German for beings of understanding, Verstand. Wesen. So, you know, beings, things, there's not a radical difference here. They're both Wesen, which can mean thing, can mean essence. Here, the main distinction that we're interested in is that between what is phenomenal or presented to us as phenomena, and then what we are thinking is out there as noumenal or noumena. And he says that they made a mistake. Right? As appearance and illusion were by those men identified, mistake we may well excuse in an undeveloped epoch. So illusion, shine, is identified with Erscheinungen, right? They're mixing these things up, not distinguishing them. Actuality, Wirklichkeit, winds up being ascribed to the noumena. And, you know, if you know your Plato or, you know, some other philosophers who are espousing similar points of view, the distinction between appearance, which is illusory, not really what the things are, and then the reality of the thing. And this carries forward all the way into the modern period. We could talk about somebody like John Locke and talking about substance and primary and secondary qualities. All of this sort of thing falls under these cases. There's something that's really real and something that we take as being real because it appears to us, it's closer to us, closer to the ways in which we're typically apprehending things through the senses. And that's the phenomena. And so he says, we indeed, rightly considering objects of sense as mere appearances, mere Erscheinungen, right? Also uses the term representations at different points. He's saying, yeah, the things of the senses, things that we perceive, are just appearances. That's fine. We don't have to say that they have absolute reality in and of themselves. He says, we confess that they are based upon a thing in itself, right? So ein Ding an sich selbst, that's the thing in itself, zum Grunde liege. So at their basis, at their foundation, at their ground, lies the thing in itself. A little bit more metaphorical language there, rather. But even saying something is based on something else is using spatial metaphors. Now, Kant goes on and he says that we know not this thing as it is in itself. We don't know things in themselves as things in themselves. Doesn't mean we don't have any possible way of talking about it or grasping it, but we don't know them. We can't cognize them the way we can things that we encounter in our experience, the things that are appearances. And we know the thing in itself through its appearances. Through the appearances that we say are in some way connected with it. And what does this mean? The way in which our senses are affected by this unknown something. He goes on and he says, the understanding, therefore, by assuming appearances, by saying that appearances actually do exist. We encounter them, right? The phenomena happen. We sense them. We encounter them. We talk about them. We make judgments about them. Because of that, we can say that we grant also the existence of things in themselves. And thus far, we may say the representation of such things, as are the basis of appearances. What does he mean by that? Things in themselves, noumena, the basis that they are providing, the representation of these, consequently of mere beings of the understanding, is not only, he says, admissible, so not only can we talk about them, but unavoidable, unvermeidlich, we can't get out of talking about them. So, you know, sometimes I should pause here for a moment. There are misconstruals of Kant that you're going to find out there, you know, in textbooks, in the internet land, all over the place. Maybe somebody that you know who thinks that they know about Kant, and they'll say, you know, Kant reduced everything to the merely phenomenal. He took the reality of things away. No, he didn't. He just says we can't know the reality of those things, the noumena, the way that we know the phenomena. But in fact, Kant thinks that there are noumena out there, and they are what phenomena are ultimately based upon. We just can't have experiences of the noumena the way we not only can, but constantly do of the phenomena. So this is a pretty important thing to stress about how people get this section of Kant's work wrong and attribute to him all sorts of views that he doesn't have, essentially making what we call a straw man fallacy. And then they get very upset. Oh, Kant is barring our way to knowing anything. No, he's not. He's just saying whatever you're going to know, you're going to encounter in experience as a phenomena, right? Doesn't mean you can't think about the noumena, but you got to realize that it's a noumenon, not a phenomenon. So he goes on and he says, our critical deduction by no means excludes things of that sort. What things of that sort? Noumena, but limits the principles, the Grundsätze, of the aesthetic in such a way that they won't extend to all things. Because if you did, then everything would be turned into mere Erscheinung or appearance, but that they hold good only of objects of possible experience. So, you know, Kant thinks that's perfectly fine. So he says, beings of the understanding are admitted, but with the inculcation of this rule, which admits no exception. We neither know nor can know. Now notice this qualifier. Anything determinate whatever about these pure beings of the understanding, because our pure concepts of the understanding, as well as our pure intuitions, extend to nothing but objects of possible experience, phenomena, not to noumena. Now, he's not saying here, because of the qualifier, you can't know anything at all about the noumena. We can. They exist. They have reality, Kant thinks, right? They are the basis, they're at the ground of the phenomena. That's knowing something, isn't it? It's just not knowing anything determinate about this noumenon, right? Or noumena in general. So, very important distinction to cull out of the text there. And he goes on and he says, this is in section 33, there's a temptation, a seduction, a mistake that people tend to make. He says, there's something seductive in our pure concepts of the understanding. They're so cool, we could say, that tempts us to a transcendent use. Transcending meaning going beyond what? The boundaries of possible experience, or the limits, the Grenze of possible experience. And so he says, what are some examples of this? We've already been talking about this in this section. Substance, right? And then he brings up several others that are really quite interesting. So power, Kraft, right? He hasn't talked about that this much at this point. But, you know, remember back to, if you've ever read Hume's Inquiry or Treatise, that our notion of power is based on the notion of causality. So he's bringing up causality here. And then he'll talk about reality, Realität, right? Or as opposed to Wirklichkeit here, or existence, Dasein, right? Or existence. So the reality of something, perhaps of a whole, maybe he's referencing here the substance, cause, and community. But there's a fourth one in here that's very interesting. action. And the word for action here is Handlung. Now that we can also translate as comportment. That is action in the sense of like human action, doing things. So this has a practical scope here as well. Something that we would find handled in the Critique of Practical Reason, and later on, that's also a later critique, in the Groundwork for the Metaphysics of Morals, where we're going to see a similar discussion of, you know, can we get to things in themselves, and what freedom is, and all of that sort of stuff. So these are concepts, and action is included in those. And then there's a, and the others, und so weiter, right? Etc., we would say. So he tells us that with these, they seem to be quite independent of experience, containing nothing of sense appearance, and so they're apparently applicable. They seem, we might actually play on words here, you know, they appear, right? They illusorily show us that they are applicable to things in themselves. And he says, what strengthens this conjecture, they contain a necessity of determination in themselves, which experience never attains. So he brings up cause here again. The concept of cause contains a rule according to which one state follows another. Now here's the key term, necessarily, but experience can only show us one state of things often or at most commonly follows another. So it doesn't give us strict universality nor necessity. So Kant is saying, you know, the pure concepts of the understanding, which do give us necessity, objective validity, universality. That's why we're tempted to go and say, yeah, these are noumena. These are about the noumena. We're getting at them. And he says, no, that's not what's actually happening. So he goes on and says, concepts of the understanding seem to have a deeper meaning and content than can be exhausted by their merely empirical use. So the understanding inadvertently adds for itself to the house of experience a much more extensive wing. It goes from looking at the phenomena and what we can say about them and the understanding that is, we could say, conditioning our experience of that, to extending a whole illusory, imaginary wing of noumena to the house. A very interesting metaphor that he's using there. And we could say, you know, what are we talking about there? What he's earlier called the intelligible world, right? The world of the understanding. A little bit later, he's going to talk about the noumena together with their sum total, the intelligible world. That's the wing of the house that he's bringing up there. We don't really know enough about noumena, and we can never know enough about noumena to do that sort of thing that we're so easily seduced into doing, and people have been in the past, including, prime example, Plato with his intelligible world, which is the more real world about which we can know more than we can about the world of appearances, the world of deceptive sense knowledge, right? So Kant is not saying no noumena. He's just saying noumena are not within the realm of possible experience. So it's really the phenomena that we have to look to if we want to see how the pure concepts of the understanding do in fact apply. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.